So this evening's talk, I've just come back from Sydney since the last Friday night talk. I've been to Sydney to give a number of talks there. And one of the talks which stretched me was on, you see the advertisement still on the board, on love, marriage and intimacy. And then sometimes they ask, what does a monk know about those things? Not very much. But that doesn't stop me giving a talk on it. I'm not sure if I said this, but actually, I think it was since I gave the last talk, there was a man actually came. This is completely off the subject. It's a man who came to see me at Serpentine Monastery. And some years ago, we had our trouble with the tracks going past. The Minister for the Environment, Alana McTiernan, organised this transport summits. So I went along to this. And there was this man who... No, I was the only monk there with all these truckies and government ministers and stuff. But a man interviewed me, and he was actually worked for like shipping transports. And apparently that he was asking me about, transport policies for shipping. And I just answered a few questions. I never realised that he told me that he wrote this article about shipping and... Buddhist attitude to shipping. He called it Zen and shipping. Not that I'm Zen at all, but that's what he called it. And apparently it was so good, it went all around the world. And so Ajahn Brahm can even sort of know what he's talking about on shipping. At least that's what it seemed to be, because he told me one of his friends in the industry sort of commented when he read the article, he said, oh, that monk Ajahn Brahm, he really knows what he's talking about. And I told him, no, I don't. But it just goes to show that you can give a talk on anything when you don't really know what you're talking about. And get it published in many newspapers all over the world. Mr. Bush does it all the time. Well, I'm going to be in trouble for that one. But come back to the title of this talk. When I was in Sydney, that somebody asked me, can you give a talk on assumptions? And that's going to be the title of this talk. They're going to be listening on the internet later on today or tomorrow or sometime. On assumptions. It's a great title for talk because it is assumptions which gets us into so much trouble and difficulties. Because we jump to conclusions. We get the wrong idea. And sometimes we can create all sorts of mischief in our relationships, in our companies, in our life. Because we just make an assumption. And half of the time, assumptions are wrong. We sort of make the wrong idea. And it's interesting, in this talk, I'm going to say not just how assumptions can be wrong, but why they are wrong and how we can avoid them being wrong in the future. So that way we can avoid a lot of trouble in our lives. But of course, the idea of like assumptions and assumptions which are wrong give lots of opportunities for funny stories and jokes. And here's the joke for today about assumptions. Somebody knows I told this at lunch today, but this is a wonderful story, especially it fits in because this is about psychic phenomena. And people who come to places like this, they like psychic things. One day, this man was passing his daughter's bedroom and he saw his daughter just praying by the bedside. She's only 6 years old. It looked so sweet. And so he just listened quietly as his daughter said, God bless Mummy. God bless Daddy, God bless Grandma, and goodbye Grandpa. He said, what? Goodbye Grandpa? What does he mean? But anyway, he went to sleep, and the following morning, he wouldn't believe it. Grandpa was dead in his bed. That was a bit spooky, a bit of a coincidence, he thought at first, when a couple of weeks later, he was passing his child's bedroom, and there she was again. God bless Mummy, God bless Daddy. Goodbye, Grandma. And you can imagine what it felt like in the morning when Grandma was dead in her bed. Now, this was really psychic. But he put it aside to coincidence, but 2 or 3 weeks later, he was passing his little daughter's bedroom, and there she was, praying, God bless Mummy. Goodbye, Daddy. And you can imagine what he felt. He couldn't go to sleep all night. In fact, he got up really early in the morning just in case. It was still dark, and he got in his car and he drove to his office to try and escape death. He locked himself in his office. He stayed there all morning, just waiting for death to come, because he saw his little daughter, "Goodbye, Daddy." And he was in such a state of worry and concern that he couldn't do any work in his office, and he was just so uptight. When he got to 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, he thought, "I've cheated death. Because of, like, getting out of the house in time, I didn't die like, you know, the grandpa and grandmother, little daughter." So he went back home, so relieved. And when he got back home and saw his wife, he said, "Oh, you wouldn't believe the day I had today and why I left office in the morning." And his wife said, "You had a bad day. What about me?" As soon as I woke up in the morning and went to the door, there was the milkman dead in front of the door. Then. Assumptions, who is Daddy? It gets you into a lot of trouble. But I've had my share of jokes with assumptions. I mean, because sometimes it's funny, because one of the reasons why there's funny stories and jokes is because we see it one way and actually the truth is another way. I remember this lady came up to me once and said, "I know why you become monks. It's because you had a broken heart." She was romantic. You know that some, you know, women are really, really romantic. And she said, "I know that before you became a monk, you probably had a girlfriend or maybe even a wife, I don't know. And because she left you, because you couldn't stand life any longer, you became a monk to forget." I said, "No, I didn't." He said, "There you are. You've forgotten." So the point is, when we assume stuff, I think, no matter how we put it, we'd always try and fit the world into our assumptions rather than changing our assumptions to fit the world. Now, those are just like funny stories, but sometimes the assumptions we make about others can, oh my goodness, create all sorts of problems in our relationships. How many times have you've been married, husbands and wives, has your husband or wife looked at you and assumed that, you know, because of what you say or what you're doing, that you're having an affair with somebody else? You're not being faithful. You were late at night. And something's happened. What's going on? And so much, there's so much suspicion there in people's lives. And it may be just completely innocent things. And we assume the worst. It's a strange thing why assumptions are quite often assuming the worst rather than giving other people the benefit of the doubt. And you can actually see why. It's because we've got this thing which I keep on calling in Buddhism of the fault-finding mind. And that fault-finding mind is when it sees something, it always tends, I don't know why we do this, but we do it so often, always tends to see the worst possible outcome or the worst possible interpretation. We never have this sense of charity, generosity, gratitude, goodwill, giving another person the benefit of the doubt. Instead of thinking Ajahn Brahm became a monk because he had a broken heart, how about looking at it in another way? But if you're romantic, if that's how you want to look at the world, that's how you will look at the world. The point is that with assumptions, the reason why we make those assumptions is because a lot of the times our experiences are bent according to the, we call them actually the defilements of our mind, just the way we look, our inclinations. If we are in a bad mood, everything we assume to be against us. Even if you're in a bad mood and your partner, when you come home, sort of gives you a hug, and you think, he's done something wrong, hasn't he? He's doing this because just to soften me up, to tell me what he's really done. We misinterpret our emotions. We misinterpret the actions, I was meant to say, of other people, rather than ever giving them sort of the benefit of the doubt. It's because of our inclinations, our desires, what we want to see or what we don't want to see. We make these assumptions and we get it all wrong. It's also because we don't have enough information about, you know, what's going on. People in the West make so many assumptions about, you know, monks and about Buddhism. most of the time because, you know, they don't know too much about it. So one of the great ways of overcoming assumptions is get good evidence, get good information, find out what you're talking about, first of all. And the second thing with assumptions is make sure you're not looking at the world through these ill will, fault-finding, or through craving and desire. You're not actually in denial to the existence or to the what's actually happening in the world, nor are you bending the world to suit yourself. Actually, you're seeing the world clearly, gaining the evidence. And if you haven't got the evidence yet, don't jump to an assumption, thinking that you've got it all right. So first of all, we've got to get all the information right, first of all. There's a nice teaching in Buddhism which anyone who's in authority should really bear in mind. It's the four reasons not to act. The four reasons not to say something. The four reasons just to stop before you make an assumption. And they say that if you're acting out of greed or desire, or out of ill will, or out of fear, or out of delusion, then you should stop. You shouldn't act or say anything. Those are like the four causes or the four underlying reasons for wrong actions, wrong speech, or wrong assumptions. You can understand why that when we've got like greed, what we want, sort of we bend the world to suit ourselves. And we assume, we mistake, we bend the truth to suit ourselves. Because that woman wanted to have her romantic ideas fulfilled, no matter what I said, she said, yeah, you know, you left the world because you had a broken heart. Because, or, you know, maybe your partner, because of whatever they do, you know, that you're having an affair with somebody else. You know, because that's why, you know, you've got no lipstick, because if you're really having an affair, you'd wipe it off first of all, wouldn't you? There it goes, proves it. Whatever it is, you'd bend the truth because of desire. If it's ill will, you know, if, you know, you don't like somebody, whatever they do, whatever they say, there's no way will you accept that as being sort of kind or loving or fair, because you hate them, because you don't like them, therefore that's how you'll see their actions. Everything will be interpreted because of that. It's fascinating actually just why anger comes up and why. Have you ever been misinterpreted or what you say or what you do? And people said that, you know, you did that in the wrong way, you shouldn't have done that, why did you do that? And said, I didn't do anything, I was just being me, that's all. But unfortunately, we misinterpret, we assume, and that's actually why we get ill will. That's actually, we start off with ill will. Because we are angry at someone, because we think that they're our enemy, whatever they do, we'll always misinterpret it. And that's one of our problems there. We don't look at people fairly. Once they're their enemy, we assume they're an enemy, we assume whatever they're doing is something going to be bad and horrible to hurt us. And because of that, we just reinforce what we already believed. And the other thing is on fear. When we're afraid, we also make many assumptions. We make many assumptions that the world is out there to get us. We make the assumption that Sol really is an extraterrestrial who's come here. Whatever it is, out of fear, we can actually assume anything, which is completely wrong. And this is why that those assumptions based on fear are not to be followed. We find out the root and make sure we're not acting, we're not speaking, we're not even thinking out of fear. And of course, delusion creates so many assumptions. People have got so little understanding of so many aspects of life. I use Buddhism, the teachings of Buddhism, the morality of Buddhism, the ethics of Buddhism, just as an example of just how delusion, misinformation, misunderstanding or lack of understanding can create so many problems. You know, just when sometimes people think that, I remember in the early years, people think that monks were just bludgers. You know, you just sit there all day doing nothing. And my goodness, I remember one person in the first years, we were walking down, I think around North Perth, and this fellow was just laying some bricks and saying, oh, you're a couple of bludgers, I'm glad that someone here does some work. And I stopped and showed him the calluses on my hand because I'd been laying bricks as well. This was just a day off when I was actually in town doing some work for the Buddhists. And we make so many assumptions. about what a monk's life is all about, for example. You know, that sometimes people think, oh, it's just so nice to be a monk. You just sit down there all day doing nothing. Oh, wouldn't that be nice? I remember when people said that. They said, after I gave a talk, that's all right for you. You're a monk. You don't live in the real world. You don't have to worry about getting up early in the morning. So what do you mean I get up at 4 o'clock? Oh, really, do you? And then I told him exactly what I did all day. And at the end of telling him what I did, a normal day for Ajahn Brahm, this man was in Singapore. He responded and said, my goodness, I didn't realize monks had to work so hard. I always wanted to be a monk one day, but now I've heard you. I'm going to stick to my old job. We make too many assumptions about life. And without enough information, because we don't have enough information, those assumptions create all sorts of problems and turmoil in our life and in the lives of others. Because when we make an assumption, it's judging. And when we judge out of any of those four, you know, wrong causes of greed, ill will, fear, or delusion, when we judge somebody or something out of those things, we make an assumption, that assumption is wrong, and it creates too much problems. So what do you assume in life? First of all, no, you assume not what other people are doing, you assume what happiness is in life. It's fascinating, actually, to assume what happiness is in life, and one of the ways we assume what happiness is in life is just with our ideals of, like, perfection and utopia. Somebody else actually sent me a card from Albany, and they wanted to talk about a movie. Actually, I saw the title of the movie in Sydney. It's called The Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I said, oh, that sounds very Buddhist, The Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. But actually, when you see that, it's full of assumptions of what happiness is. Eternal sunshine, that's okay if you don't suffer from sort of skin cancer. And if you like it, there must have been a title which was actually created by somebody who lived in these cold countries in Northern Europe where they hardly ever see the sun. Certainly I know in like UK that they have the idea of paradise, you know, being sunshine, an eternal sunshine. Oh, isn't that wonderful? Anyone who lives in hot countries would think, oh, wouldn't it be nice to have a temperate climate? It's fascinating, actually, what we have, our assumptions of happiness. And many of those assumptions of ultimate happiness come in our ideas of what heaven is. It's wonderful, actually, to contemplate the different cultures and how they describe what heaven is, because that's actually how we describe our heaven, what we really want to have as a utopia, our ultimate happiness. What is heaven for you? I remember first understanding this, or getting to get grips on the ideas of people's happiness, is when I read the Islamic book, the Quran, and found out for them, heaven was a place with lots of green fields and lots of water. Because in the Arab countries, that's what they missed. They just had sand and palm trees and deserts. And then when I read in England what their idea of heaven was, it was places with lots of sand and palm trees and heat. Simply because that's what they missed. And actually you see that there's, you know, they should do a swap there. Or I think the Muslims would get reborn in England and all the English people would be reborn in some sort of desert country. Because of our ideals of what happiness is. Now our assumptions of what happiness is. So that motivates us actually to aspire to something which after when we get in we find out it's not happiness after all. And we find we miss so much. Of course, to end that story about what heaven is, the best or the most interesting heaven of all is Valhalla, the heaven of the Vikings. Because in the heaven of the Vikings, if you haven't heard this before, in Valhalla, there the Vikings, the good Vikings, when they die and they go to the heaven of the Vikings, when they wake up, they've got this big feast on this table with lots and lots of alcohol, heaps of grog. And when they've eaten and got drunk, then they fight each other. They fight each other to death. And as soon as they die, then they wake up again, another feast, more drinking, more fighting. And for a Viking, that's heaven. You talk to a few people in Northbridge this evening and say, yeah, yeah, that's the place I want to go to. Eating, fighting and alcohol. And that's actually true. Ask it in Norway. We've got a Norwegian monk at our monastery. That's actually what we say is like heaven for the Vikings. So it's an assumption of that's what happiness is. So what is your heaven? What do you think heaven would be? And how many assumptions is that full of? How many of you are buying a lottery ticket this weekend, thinking that once I win the lotto, then I'll be in heaven? And anyone who's ever won the lotto, you know what happens to them. As soon as you win the lottery, you have to hide from all your friends. And all your friends say, hey, you know, lend us a few, a few dollars. You got so much. And this one of the problems is that if you become wealthy, actually you lose a lot of your old happiness. In Buddhism, we have this wonderful idea of just the different sufferings of life. When you're poor, you have poor person suffering. And when you become rich, you have rich person suffering. You don't have poor person suffering anymore. That's disappeared. That's not with you anymore. Poor person suffering has disappeared when you become rich. So it's true, one type of suffering has disappeared, but when you become rich, you get rich person's suffering. A different type of suffering. It's the same when you're single. All of you who are single, who are looking for a partner in life, you have got what we call single person's suffering. And then you're looking for a partner because you don't want to be alone. You don't want to be alone. You want someone to share your life with. Now you want sort of a partner, someone you can be intimate with and you could do things together with. You've got single person suffering. So then you find someone and you get married. All that single person suffering has disappeared. And now you have, you've got it, married person suffering. When you're married person suffering, you think back at the times when you're single, you're by yourself, you could do this, you didn't have to worry about the other person. You've got married person suffering. And so when you've got married person suffering, you think, hey, let's get divorced. And it's true, when you get divorced, you've got not, haven't got married person suffering anymore. You've got divorced person. This different type of suffering. There was this very powerful experience I had once when, in our monastery, these two women came along, two Thai ladies, and they were sisters. So they came together to make offerings to the monastery. And afterwards, they came to get the free counselling, which comes with offering dana to the monastery. They came and told me their problems. The first lady, the elder sister, went first, and she had a husband. She wasn't very happy. And she started to moan about married life and having a husband and all this rah, rah, rah. And after I listened to her, then I listened to her sister. Her sister was single. She couldn't find a husband. And I thought of a solution. But they wouldn't buy it. They wouldn't buy it. It's a classic case of there was a person who was married, who had married person suffering. There was a person who had single person suffering, and they couldn't see that, okay, you get married, it's still the same. It's just a different type of suffering, that's all. We make these assumptions that when we get, you know, rid of our husband, we get somebody else, or when we find a nice woman and get married, then we'd be okay. Some people even make that assumption, you know, when I can leave home and become a monk. Okay, you haven't got sort of, you know, householder suffering, you get monk suffering then. Or nun suffering. So it's the assumption we make about life. And we find that that can just make us run around looking for happiness, and we never find happiness. We're always wondering what the heck is going on with this life. It's our assumptions are wrong. And what do you actually assume is happiness in life? And after a while, you get the point that doesn't matter where you are, whether you're single, whether you're married, whether you're a monk, whether you're a nun, old or young, out of work or in work, wealthy or whatever, if you think that happiness is going to come somewhere else, if you assume that happiness is waiting for you sometime in the future, when you change this, when you change that, then I'll be happy. That assumption is stopping you from realizing the truth. If you think that if you, you know, do enough good karma, you go to church. You know, some people do that. They come here on a Friday evening. They go to the mosque on a Saturday. They go to church on a Sunday just in case. Cover all the bases. Because they think that that way, no matter what happens, that when I die, then I'll be happy. And that's a sort of assumption there. And heaven realms will be happiness, but they can't be happiness. It's great thinking about heaven because that's our assumption of ultimate happiness. In heaven, I mean, if you go to heaven, I mean, what age are you in heaven? Can actually you choose your age? Do you want to be like an 18-year-old in heaven? Or does it, you know, when you die, that's the age you're stuck with for the rest of eternity? So some of these poor old people, they're going to have their walking sticks, you know, for the rest of eternity. No backaches. And you know, can you take your cat or your dog up to heaven? If you take your cat up to heaven, there has to be mice in heaven to make the cats happy. And what about the mice? They're not very happy having been chased by the cats. The whole thing is very problematical. So the thing is, it's our assumptions. Unfortunately, people believe those assumptions. They believe them so strongly, it creates a lot of problems and difficulties in this world. Someone was asking me today, just beforehand, what is a Buddhist view on like homosexual marriages? Because that's actually in the news recently, about gay marriages. And basically, the Buddhist view is not really assumptions, but actually comes from the experience of your heart. As many of you know, I was a heterosexual before I became a monk, and so I had no experience, not much experience about the lives of gays. But, you know, becoming a monk and actually being a counsellor and many gay people, couples come here and they're such welcome members of our Buddhist society. And actually, when actually you feel in your heart about, you know, what it's like to be a gay and some of the pressure and the problems and the oppression which they feel, you know, your heart goes out and you think, what's wrong with that? In the books, it might write, it's bad, it's wrong, but those are only the books. One of the great things about Buddhism, and it's part of the talk on values which I gave last week, that Buddhism lies in the heart of the human being. The books and the theories, they're secondary. And so, you know, you feel this is actually okay. If a couple of people fall in love, it doesn't matter whether they're gay, whether they're heterosexual or whatever, and if they want to make a commitment together, they should not be forbidden from doing that, or they should not be treated differently from doing that. It doesn't make sense to me. And that's written in the book of the heart, because that's where assumptions stop, when you actually feel you experience things. You know, books are only approximations. You know, all thoughts and ideas, they're just generalizations. We get it wrong too often. Sometimes we assume those books are right and ultimate truths. But we should all know from our experience that the only ultimate truth, the only thing you can trust in, the only thing which is real, is your own experience, your own feelings inside of yourself. That's why I always say, follow your gut feeling, except when you've got indigestion. Because that gut feeling, that insight will actually tell you what truth is and what right is. You know, as a monk, it's great sort of actually coming and being like in a Western country. You know, we have to meet so many people, see different ideas, face problems. And how do you solve those problems? You know, sometimes I can go into the books and say, what did the Buddha say about this? But too often these days, more often these days, I would say, I just go to your heart and actually feel when you're very peaceful, you've got no biases. And those biases are greed, ill will, fear, or delusion. Those four biases there, the four things which make you judge and assume wrongly. When you get rid of those and you see clearly, it's quite obvious there's nothing wrong with those things. And so you give kindness and love instead of just fear, ill will, desire, or delusion. So this is an example of how that sometimes by making assumptions from those things, we get judgmental. Because we get judgmental, we create so much pain in others and problems amongst ourselves. A lady from Singapore wrote to me years ago and they said that their son had just come out and just said they were gay. What should I do? They complained. And I said, look, you're a Buddhist. Don't you actually chant, may all beings be happy and well? Isn't your son a being? Are you going to exclude them? My goodness, creates that love, that compassion, the door of my heart's open to you, son, no matter who you are, no matter what you do. So actually they thank me for that. So they felt that they were okay to love their son. But I was disappointed. Why did they have to ask a monk to begin with? They should have actually believed their heart. It's a mother's love for their son. It's because all these assumptions which society makes on us, all those assumptions, that is why that people judge too easily. They believe those assumptions rather than believing their own heart. We have so many books of assumptions, so many experts telling us what to assume. But really what we should do is actually find those truths for ourselves in our own heart and our own experience once we're free of those four things which actually bend the truth. When those four things which bend the truth, remember what they are, sort of desire, ill will, fear and delusion. Once those four things are overcome, then we can actually see clearly. When you start to see clearly, you can see just all those assumptions of judgmentalism, they just doesn't make sense at all. How can you judge another human being? Well, sometimes I tried that. Sometimes as people up in my monastery do stupid things. And sometimes you think you judge them. Why the heck did they do that? It's a stupid thing to do. I can't understand how they could manage to do that. But then after a while, I found out why. When you find out all the causes, it becomes quite understandable. And once you can understand it, you realize that sometimes your judgments are far too harsh. Remember, just in Thailand, once a week, we used to stay up all night. When we used to stay up all night, sometimes I would get upset at some of the monks. Because some of the monks, especially the young ones, would sneak off back to their huts. And I'd see them. And I thought, they can't do that. They shouldn't do that. And I decided that if they sneaked off, sometimes they'd just go around the back to make themselves an illegal cup of tea. They weren't supposed to do that. They were breaking the monastery rules. Now, it's not fair that they should do that. But I noticed that all the arguments in that monastery, they would always occur the day after we'd stay up all night meditating. That's when there'd be any altercations in the monastery. And so I thought that it wasn't the right time to actually to tell someone off when you were so tired that you were obviously grumpy. So what I did, I remember one morning, I had all these gripes against these monks, you know, the one who sneaked off, the one who had actually gone and had himself an illegal cup of tea. And I put their names on a list with all that they had done. And I thought, once I'd had a rest, then I would go and tell them off. Because they couldn't get away with it. And I put it on a piece of paper, so when I woke up, the piece of paper was there. And what happened as soon as I woke up, after a rest, after staying up all night, I looked at that piece of paper. All those little things they did seemed so petty. Why am I going to upset somebody and upset myself? Because I was tired as well. If I had any guts and wasn't just trying to be the super monk, I would have gone and had a sleep as well. I'd have gone and get myself a cup of tea. I've realized that as soon as I had a good rest and felt well and felt energetic, I thought all those things I was going to criticize somebody for didn't make any sense at all. I screwed up that piece of paper and thrown it in the waste bin. Before, when I was tired, when I wasn't feeling good, when I had the grumpiness of lack of sleep, then I thought it was important. Once I'd rested, it wasn't important at all. It taught me why we get critical of other people. It's not what the other people are doing. It's how we feel. If you're tired, if you're sick, it's not the right time to tell somebody else off. Because the ill will you feel is bending the reality. You're judging them when you're not capable of making a rational decision. How many of us judge each other when we're not feeling at our best? How many of us say things to our loved ones just because we are ill, we are weak, we are stressed, we are just so tired? It's not the right time to speak to another when you're so tired like that. So instead, you only speak to another person when you're feeling at your best, not when you're feeling at your worst. Otherwise, you're judging the other person unfairly. The assumptions are being bent by your tiredness, by your illness. by your lack of inner peace. And you find actually when you are peaceful, when you haven't got that ill will, you haven't got that desire, haven't got fear or delusion, then some of the judgments you make on others, you just can't do it. It doesn't make any sense anymore. How can you judge what another person does? Sometimes we just make assumptions out of delusion, thinking we know the best. One of the most powerful of those anecdotes, which actually just shows just how we can make assumptions which can hurt another person, was that story of the young boy who'd been born deaf. He'd been born deaf, and every year or 6 months, his parents would take him to the doctor to get a checkup. And on this one occasion, he must have been about 8 or 9 years of age. They took him to the doctor, and the doctor had just read in the medical journal there was a special procedure which could heal a person's hearing. People who had been born deaf, in 10% of cases, could have their hearing restored. And they asked the parents, do you want to go through that operation with your son? Shall we do it? And the parents said, well, nothing to lose. Maybe we might be lucky, 1 in 10 chance he may get his hearing back. Give it a try. So they gave it a try. And that young man got his hearing back. He was one of the 10%. That procedure worked. And as soon as he could hear, he got very angry at his parents and doctor for not asking him whether he wanted to hear. Everyone had assumed that hearing is a wonderful thing, but having been deaf for 9 years, he had learned sign language. He'd been able to learn how to read people's lips. And he said that it's a fascinating thing. Instead of giving my hearing, it would be wonderful if you just give me like another hand to feel the world. He was so sensitive in the other areas. And what he now had was just noise, noise which he couldn't turn off. And he said, what a terrible thing you've done for me, just giving me all this noise which I can hardly understand the meaning of. Why didn't you ask me first of all? The point was, when I read that article, I assumed that everyone wanted to hear. It was an assumption which caused a lot of misery to a young boy. They should have asked him first. It's the same with many of the things which we assume. We assume we know best. Our Western world has done a lot of mischief when it thinks it knows what, say, undeveloped countries want the most. And it sends out the aid teams, which goes aiding these countries and giving them things which they don't really need or want in the first place. But we assume that everyone needs a video recorder and a TV. And a fridge, and all the things which we take for granted, think that that's what they really need. And we've wrecked so many societies by instead of asking them what they really need, we give them what we assume they need. That is our problem. Too many assumptions. We assume that the many countries in the world want freedom. But freedom from what? A lot of the times they want freedom from interference to get on with their own business instead of us assuming that we know what another person wants. Too many assumptions create a lot of mischief in the world. So instead of having those assumptions, we should actually test out when we're judging another person or judging the situation or thinking out what we need to make sure we're not acting from those four things, to check our minds. Not out of desire or personal, you know, what I want out of these things. Not out of ill will. Not out of fear. Because actually fear bends the truth. And not out of delusion. And then we find we just cannot judge that easily. How can you judge another person? How can you judge yourselves? Again, we make a lot of assumptions about ourselves. One of the biggest problems in the world is about lack of self-esteem, depression, which makes sometimes people commit suicide. And where does that come from? So many assumptions are made about ourselves. I am better. I am worse. I am the same. How on earth can you judge yourself against another person? There's so many assumptions we make. You know, we assume that everyone else is having a good time except me. We assume that everyone else is doing well except me. And there's assumptions there. If you actually go and ask somebody else, you find they're exactly the same as you. It's one of the first things which I learned when I became a monk and people started talking to me. When the first person came and told me their problems, I thought that was interesting. When the second person came and told me their problems, I felt I've heard that before somewhere. When a third person came up, here we go again. So the basic problems, you think that you're all alone and your problem is unique and you're the only person who feels like this and you're the only person in the whole world who's got your problems. Your problems, my friends, are shared with everybody. There's common problems about not knowing who you are and where you fit in and what you should be doing in life and all this sort of stuff. And we stop making assumptions and come to the truth of the moment. Stop all these desires, ill will, because that's what bends the truth. To see the world beyond desire, beyond ill will, get to this beautiful meditation state of present moment awareness, embracing the world so we can know it as it is, not as we want it to be, not as we're afraid of it might be, but actually seeing it as it truly is. And a lot of our assumptions just disappear. In our present world, you know, too many people assume this is the only life. They assume they can get away with things. We're just talking on the car coming up here about corporate fraud and just how some of these people in businesses think that if they can cheat and get away with enough so they can get enough millions so they can hire the best lawyers and they never get caught. Unfortunately, the lawyers can't stop you from the law of karma. No lawyers can interfere there because the law of karma acts sort of independently of any person, just cause and effect. That's actually what happens. And this is what actually happens with that cause and effect business. And just someone came to the monastery today, and they'd just been a couple of weeks before, but they're having such a hard time because their car was, they didn't have a car, they had to rely on lifts. And having come to our monastery to offer gifts, to offer some food, when they got back home, their brother rang up. "I've got a spare car," he said. "Do you want to use it?" Straight after coming to the monastery, they got a new car. So those people who want a car, you can come to the monastery tomorrow. You know, we're going to announce soon, this is the Waisak weekend. This is the holiest weekend in Buddhism, this weekend, just celebrating the birth, enlightenment, passing away of the Buddha. It's like Easter for the Buddhists. And you know, over the Easter weekend, there was double demerit points. So on Waisak weekend, we do the same. It's double merit points. Whatever merit you make on this weekend, you got double merit. Why not? So she obviously got double merit, so you may get a car, you never know. But anyway, that law of karma, that means that you don't get away with anything. I think that's just a wonderful thing to have, to assume that you can cheat, you can hurt, you can steal, even if it's legal according to the law of our land, or you can get a good lawyer who makes it sort of legal, you can get out of the legal consequences of the action. Like in Buddhism, you know, there's no way you can actually avoid the cosmic consequences according to the law of karma. Nor is there any way that you can not expect the wonderful consequences of being a good person. Eventually, it must happen. What that does is actually stops that assumption you can get away with things as long as you don't get caught. Stops that assumption that if you don't do good things, that good things, doing good things, that sometimes nothing good happens to you. Those wrong assumptions create the problems in our world. We can only see the truth of things. We see that like karma is a cosmic law which happens despite what you think and what you assume. Then there's no reason that why you'd stop, you know, doing good things and why you do anything bad at all in this world. We do bad things because we assume we're going to get away with it. We assume we won't get caught. We assume that sort of no one's going to find out. There'll be no consequences of our actions. And those are the assumptions, I think, which really hurt our world. And if the powers that be realise that wherever you kill somebody, wherever you exploit somebody, there's a karmic consequence there which will come back on you. If you assume otherwise, you're just being foolish. And why would anybody exploit or hurt? Much of the troubles in the world will be overcome. Just by that acceptance of like a law of karma. And I think that many people feel that in their hearts. You don't have to believe it because it's written in some sort of book. A lot of people can actually feel that that makes sense. That's that inner feeling of justice which everybody has. They want the world to be fair. And the world is fair. They want the good people to be rewarded. They want the selfish people to be taught a lesson. And we feel that that's the way this world should be. That's the way the world is. If you assume otherwise, you're missing the point and you're creating a lot of problems for yourself. The point is that when we make those wrong assumptions, we miss the truth. The truth is not an assumption. An assumption is something which we believe just on not enough evidence, bent by desire, ill will, or fear, not really seeing the truth of things. Which is why in this path of Buddhism, we go against those forces which bend the truth. We go against them by letting go of desire, by letting go of ill will, by being fearless, and by our mindfulness overcoming delusion. We see things rather than just believe things. That actually is the practice of meditation. That's why we meditate. We meditate to let go of desire, to have compassion so we don't have ill will, to be fearless and to go against delusion. And this path of meditation is actually opening up the mind to truth. Which is why when people meditate, they start to see things as they truly are. All that you wanted to believe, all you didn't like to see, all that you were afraid to see, you have to see. In meditation, one of the great things, the purposes of meditation, is to get rid of those four things which bend the truth. So it's not actually seeing things you want to see. It's not seeing what you don't like seeing. It's going beyond what you're afraid to see. To see things as they truly are. And when you see things as they truly are, all those assumptions are abandoned. And instead of assuming, you see the truth. What you see, the truth, you assume that you're worse, you're better, they're the same. You see that who's better, who's the same? Somebody earlier was saying they heard that I think somebody was passing on the word that I was the Elvis of Buddhism. Someone actually wrote an email. He said, Ajahn Brahm, you're the Elvis of Buddhism. I think, what do you mean I'm the Elvis of Buddhism? I haven't got long sideburns. I don't put brill cream on my hair. I haven't got enough to put brill cream on. And I certainly don't go around in blue suede thongs. For those of you who know Elvis. So who's Elvis? Is my nose Elvis or is my feet Elvis? If you say that I'm better, what's better? We have this, is your mind better? Is your body better? Is your perception or your consciousness better? What do you mean better or worse? When we analyse it through truth, there's no better or worse. You can't say anything is better or worse. It's like saying, a tree is better than grass. A kangaroo is better than a bird, or a bird is better than a cow. Who can say what's better or worse? Who can say that you are better or worse than anybody else? You just can't say that. Everyone has got their unique place in the world. They should be accepted as such, respected as such. Everyone is required in this world. And if we don't do that, we don't respect everyone in this world. We're just getting judgmental. You know that story I told it just a couple of days ago in Sydney? When I was a school teacher, the kid who came last in the class, in my class of 30 kids, one kid always has to come bottom of the class. And when I saw them, they looked so depressed. They looked so miserable. And out of compassion, I went up to them as their teacher. And I said to this young boy, I said, listen, in Buddhism, we've got something called the Bodhisattva. A Bodhisattva is someone who gives up their own happiness. They sacrifice themselves for other beings. I said, that's you, I said. You sacrificed yourself for all those other 29 children in the class, so they don't have to take that terrible report you have back to their parents. They don't have to suffer like you will have to suffer. They don't have to be miserable because you have taken that terrible position in class, the 30th in the bottom of the class. I said, you're a Bodhisattva. In Buddhism, we praise you above all others. The person in bottom in the class has their place in the world. They need to be looked at with gratitude, with respect, because someone has to take that place. And it's important they do. So we don't say they're better or they're worse. Everyone has their place in this world. Isn't it wonderful when we respect people for who they are rather than what they should be? When we think everyone has got their place. We don't actually compare who's the best, who's the worst. You know, whether monks are better than lay people, whether men are better than women, whether old people are better than young people. We don't judge anymore. Everyone has their place. In a football team, we need the backs, we need the goalkeeper, we need the forwards. Everyone is a member of the team. And everyone has got their role to play. So why should we judge one against another? Even those people who are sick, give the opportunity for other people to care. Those people who are poor, give the other people the chance to look after them. People who are weak, help give the opportunity of others to give compassion and protection. People who are strong have the opportunity to care for others. We've all got our place in this world. When we all accept our place in this world, we change from birth to birth. We switch sides. We switch positions. That's our life. When we don't judge one person against another, then we have an understanding about the problem of our assumptions. I am better, I am worse, I am the same. Those are called the conceits, the assumptions of a self, the assumptions of judging. We just be ourselves then. Whoever you are welcome in this universe. When we welcome ourselves into this universe, when we're at peace with ourselves, with no assumptions, then actually we can be at peace with others without imposing those assumptions on others. This is what really loving kindness means. The door of my heart's open to you, no matter who you are. It's assumptionless loving kindness. It's a peace which doesn't judge. And that comes from your heart, not from the books. You know it's true because it's inspiring. What inspires you is a sign, not of an assumption, but of a great truth, of a reality. The books are just lists of assumptions, approximations, ideas written down by people which have got a lot of truth in them. But the books are like the menu. Please don't think they're the food. Don't eat the menus. And instead, feel the heart. All the assumptions stop when you feel the heart. I gave the example of the gay community. You can assume so much because you don't know. I'm not a gay. How would I know? I could assume so much. I'm not married. How can I give a talk on marriage? I can assume. How can I give a talk on shipping? But if you read your heart, all the truths are there. And from there, you can be an expert on shipping. And give an interview which goes all around the world, and people will say to you, yeah, you know what you're talking about. And you do, because you're talking from the heart, not from assumptions. Do you get the point? Hope you do, because that's all you're getting. Okay, so today's talk was on assumptions, backwards and forwards, but come back to them. Okay, has anyone got any questions about today's talk? That was on forwards on assumptions. Yeah. Oh, that's an interesting one. Would it be bad karma for a lawyer actually to defend a crook? It's, I know that, remember Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi was a lawyer, and he made a point that if he thought that the person was guilty, he would not defend them. However, some lawyers have said, well, they have to do this duty, actually, to support the person as a matter of duty. But that's actually our Western adversarial way of justice. I think in the German system, the job of especially a judge has more power, is to find the truth rather than just to protect the person you are defending. So I think sometimes our system is a little bit wrong there. And I can see just the idea if a person thinks another person is guilty, that you know their job would actually probably be to advise them of their rights, but also to say, well, maybe the best thing you can do is actually to be honest. If you get away with the court case, you don't really get away with the karma. I think there are some judges, some lawyers like that, who are really fair. Remember the story of the lawyer who was, man came to see him and asked, do you give free legal advice? He said, no, that'd be $50. It's another lawyer joke. Do you give free legal advice? No, that'd be $50. I think there is some karma in there. Yeah. Gary Glitter, the paedophile, has gone back to Cambodia. Now, first of all, it's an interesting statement there. Gary Glitter, the paedophile. There's actually a little bit of judgment in there. It'd be Gary Glitter who's actually done paedophile activities. And I'm very careful with this particular point here because if a person has done one bad thing, we assume that that's their person. And that's actually one of those you've got to be very careful about. If your husband has lied, they're not a liar. They're a person who's made a lie. They've done a lie. If a person has, say your wife has actually slept with somebody else, they're not an adulterer. There's someone who's done an adulterous thing. Because that gives a person a chance to change. If Gary Glitter, he's done paedophile activities before. He's not necessarily a paedophile. People can change. Unfortunately, we don't give people that freedom to change, and that's one of our assumptions. We assume they've done it once, they'll always do that. That's an assumption. Obviously, that there's a greater chance they will do that again, so you've got to be very careful there. And you know, if it's gone to Cambodia to do that, that I'm not sure that you know, there are laws, and I think Australia, I know that if someone does paedophilia activity outside, they could be prosecuted when they come back to the home country. And those sorts of activities should you know, be prosecuted because you know, one of our jobs is to care for those people who are weaker than us, and children are weaker than us. The adult's job is to care and protect the children. So I think I haven't heard that news, but it's disturbing, it's worrying. But I don't know, Gary Glitter, maybe he's just gone there for a holiday. I know it's one of the centres of paedophilia in the world, but I think it's part of the job of our legislators, our governments, is actually to protect people. I can't see why they can't work with the governments overseas, you know, to find those hot spots of harm and abuse and to have some legal means of stopping it. He has to have a passport. Can't a passport be taken away or visas not issued? I don't know. I'm not a sort of politician. I'm not in the immigration department. But you'd think that that's possible. But it's very, very worrying, obviously. But sometimes we can't always make that assumption because I've done it once, I'd always be like that. I remember I've worked with criminals before. They say one of the worst things is that when a criminal has finished, or a person or other, I shouldn't have called them a criminal, a person who's done a criminal act, when they're released from jail, it's so hard for some of them to get a job. You know, because you know, if you're an employer, you've got your own business. Obviously, who would you employ if you've got a person who's got a criminal record and a person who hasn't, they've got the same abilities? Sometimes it's obviously a lack of trust to a person who's committed a crime. They find it very, very difficult to get back, you know, to work again. And because of that, sometimes there's the encouragement to do criminal activity again because they've got no choice. There's that terrible recidivism. And people always look at them upon them as a criminal. They're branded. So I always be very careful there not to assume that someone's done a criminal act once, they'll always be a criminal. Never assume that your child has made a mistake, you know, because they've maybe taken drugs, that they're a drug addict. It may be the case, but don't make that assumption. If you make that assumption, you're not allowing them to change. Sometimes, actually, you wonder why people can do such things. Like as a monk, you always, instead of like being so judgmental, sometimes you always try and understand, why would a person actually commit sort of a paedophilia act? And then sometimes you think that maybe because our society always makes like pleasure the main goal of life, instead of celebrating more the happiness of responsibility, you know, the deeper happiness of caring. I think when we make pleasure the be-all and end-all of life, I think maybe we are encouraging such things as paedophilia and rape and any sexual activity which people get pleasure in, thinking that's a be-all and end-all of life. I think it's important for people actually to change those values and to promote other ways of happiness and to promote the happiness of... This is actually what the Buddha said, the happiness of keeping like a moral, high moral standard. Because he actually had given a name for that, he called it Anavajrasukha, the happiness of like being blameless. You, at the end of your week, the end of your year, you look back on what you've done and you haven't hurt or harmed anybody else. That gives you a huge happiness boost. If we actually could praise that, we realize that that should be praised. Instead of just the momentary happiness of late sex or excitement or extreme sports or when your footy team, you know, beats the other footy team. And I think because our society just is praising and promoting just momentary happiness and not promoting just the deeper happinesses, and I think maybe people do those things. Look for the false happinesses of the moment. I don't know, but it's, instead of blaming, you always want to contemplate and find the deep answers. I was thinking, why would a person do that? It's hard for me because I came from a very strong family. And there was no such paedophilia anywhere in my family. And I'm not just blinding my eyes to that. I know all the family for a long time. I just didn't even think of that. But nowadays, a lot of people say that's quite common. Why? I'm trying to find out the answer why. We actually find out the answer why, that then maybe you can actually do something about it. It's a good question, but it's interesting to try and find the answer to it. Anyway, any other question? Going, going, gone. So please remember that this is our Waisak weekend. Double merit points. So you've already made lots of merit today by coming to listen to this Dhamma discourse. They say listening to the Dhamma is one of the great ways to make merit, so double merit today. And if you'd like to come the next couple of days, we've got amazing things happening around this Buddhist center, and that's going to be told to you now by Sol. So this is how you can make double merit for this weekend.